and recipes with adventures too. Wait and see, Flavor Living Radio. Everything you'd want to know. So tune in now and start listening to Flavor Living Radio. It's an awesome radio show.
The history of evolution has taught us that life will not be contained. Life breaks free, it expands to new territories, and it crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but, well, there it is.
There it is.
You're implying that a group composed entirely of female animals will breed?
No, I'm simply saying that life, finds a way.
Welcome to Flavor Living Radio. This is Bryant, your host, and welcome to our show. And we're doing a series here on Flavor Living Radio called More Clever Than Ever, a three-part series, and today's our first part. And here in the early part of March, March 7th, we have a guest today. And basically, our guest has, I've never seen this in my life, in one and only on the web. It's a culinary encyclopedia, a food reference. And today we have the inventor of the culinary encyclopedia. We want to welcome Chef James Eller. Hello, Chef James. How are you doing?
Okay, pretty good today.
Wow, I didn't give a really in-depth how large this encyclopedia is, culinary encyclopedia. But I wanted to kind of ease into this show today to explain to everybody what this really is. So how's it going? You're in Minnesota today, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I live here now.
As we go into it, the show. I just want to explain the culinary encyclopedia, if I got this right, has 9,000 food festivals, 20,000...
Yeah, it's a little more than 9,000. It grows every day.
Okay, so you said there's more than 9,000. And it has to be 20,000 pages on the website.
That's correct.
And you spent 12 hours a day working on this site.
Yeah, it's not all sitting at my computer. A good part of it is research, which to me is just, it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's really cool that you just put this everything together. But before we get into the food encyclopedia, before we go into it, I wanted to kind of share your background. And, I have I got a time machine here on Flavor Living, first ever time machine. I wanted you to take our time machine as we go back to Chef James. We go back, and I wanted to see if you wanted to take our time machine today.
That sounds good.
All right. Okay. So we are going in our time machine. We put on everything here. There we go. We're going. We're traveling. Here we go. We're in New York City. We're in Brooklyn, New York. And you're working at the Wall Street, and you're working there as a computer system analyst. Because your accent, I couldn't hear, I hear it every now and again, the New York accent, but I hear more Minnesota, Midwest accent. So tell us about New York, your experiences in New York City. So we're here, the time machine brought us to New York City. So tell us about New York.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, which is right across the river from lower Manhattan, and just a five-minute subway ride to Wall Street. That was my first job when I got out of college, and I just kind of accidentally fell into being a computer analyst. The bank I started working at, U.S. Trust Company, had just installed the first IBM mainframe computers. They were one of the first banks to have them, the IBM 360.
Wow.
And And they asked for volunteers for training on that, and I did, and I did very well and moved very quickly because I learned fast, and I learned that's how I originally learned about computers.
Now, I mean, I researched a computer analyst, and what I got from the information I got from him is like they analyze and determine as far as managing risk, finding opportunity, helping people set up computer systems. Is that what it's about, the computer analyst, especially for Wall Street?
Right. Well, in the beginning, you have to realize nobody knew much about running computers then.
Yeah, right.
A good part of my job was trying to explain how computers worked to the people that were going to be punching IBM cards and having to deal with requests from brokers and that. And really, even the people that were training me didn't know what they were doing that much. It was so new.
So basically, I mean, this was an opportunity to invent then, right?
Exactly. You know, this was back in 1962. So.
Ah, so really, you were the inventor of what the computer systems are for finance today, the beginning.
Right. Right. That's, you know, it's helped in methods and having the input information in that.
Wow. Now, we got to take our time machine again here, Captain. We're going to take our time machine here. We can jump in our time machine here. And we're going to go to, we're going to go to Colorado. We're going to Colorado, and here, what I heard is that as an executive chef, you mean going into the chef industry was a plan, or did it happen by accident? How did it happen?
Well, it happened by accident.
Ah.
Cooking has always been a hobby with me.
Okay.
And, if somebody's birthday, there's always get James to cook the meal for it. And frequently it was Sauerbraten, which is one of my favorite foods, which is a German pot roast. And a friend of mine who lived in town there, he was setting up, he had a vegetarian restaurant, and he was asked to set up a restaurant at a new country club in Cripple Creek, Colorado. And he asked me to help him because, you know, since I had cooked a lot. So I helped him set up and order equipment and order the food stocks and everything they need. And when everything was set up, he said, "Okay, James, I lied to you. I'm not going to be running this. You are."
You must have, like, froze for, like, 5 minutes, like, 10 minutes. You must have froze for, like, at least a half an hour. Just froze.
Yeah. And, I said, okay, well, I'll give it a try. I wasn't sure I'd be successful, but I loved it, and that hooked me on becoming a professional chef.
So this was a, because, I saw this at Cripple Creek, Colorado, and so it was a restaurant there called Cripple Creek Restaurant in Colorado.
The Cripple Creek Inn, yeah.
I was researching too. I saw that there's a renowned recipe that you must have took this recipe with you called the Cripple Creek meatloaf recipe. Can you break that down? The meatloaf,
right.
The Cripple Creek meatloaf.
Well, one of the key ingredients in it is pica pepper sauce. Now, pica pepper is a Jamaican product. It's not extremely hot. If you think of like maybe an A1 sauce with some hot peppers added to it, okay?
Okay.
That's what it's similar to, okay? And hot peppers and mango.
Wow, can you? That sounds like really calypso, very. Spice is really good.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
It gives it a very unique flavor.
Wow. I like. So that's cool. So this was Now, we're here in Colorado, and I just wanted to explain before we go to our next go. From Colorado, you also went to Arkansas to Arkansas, but no, we got to take our machine because we're going to go if we could, because I can't skip this part either, because I'm doing this to show everybody everything that you've done to come to this point of this culinary encyclopedia, you know. So we have to take our time machine again, and we're going to North Carolina, everybody. So, yeah, we're going to just go to North Carolina real quick. We're traveling here. We're now in New Bern. We're in North Carolina, the New Bern Country Club. In North Carolina, actually. So we left Colorado. We went to North Carolina. Now, listen, I know golfers... different golf members have different tastes. You know, everybody's got, I want this one, I want this, I want that. Especially being a member of a golf, you know, you were a chef at this country club in North Carolina. How was that challenge as being a chef for that, for taking all people's interests, you know, as far as cooking what they want, the members for the golf club?
It's a challenge. It was a totally different area of the country than I had ever been in. And the New Bern Golf and Country Club is the second oldest country club in the United States. Wow. New Bern is also the place where a guy named Caleb Branham, back in the early 1900s, created Brad's Drink, which... a year later, he renamed Pepsi-Cola. So
really, Pepsi-Cola comes from...
It has a history.
Wow. So Pepsi-Cola originally, it really comes from North Carolina, then Pepsi did.
Yeah, that was invented by a pharmacist there. And it seems like pharmacists invented most of the soft drinks that we have, Coca-Cola, all of them. That was big. There were health drinks back then, originally.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, it's the New Bern Golf and Country Club. You know, it's I learned a lot of coastal food there, cooking with blue crabs and fresh seafood, which I hadn't really had a lot of experience with. You know, learning the business originally in Colorado. So I learned a lot about seafood there.
Wow. Now, you know, I was looking at their schedule there in New Bern, and their schedule of cooking was they were on point. I saw they had they have the main dining room, the bar, the breakfast, Sunday buffet, a dinner, another bar. Then they had ballrooms and private dinners. So it seemed like it was really high-end. Yeah, it was like high-end cooking and everything there at the country club.
Oh, no, definitely, definitely. These are people, most of the people in that area trace their ancestry back to the Revolutionary War and earlier. So they are, it's mostly old money, you know, families that have been rich. So, you know, they're very, very fussy, put it that way.
That's it. You were nice about that, Chef James. You were nice about that. Well, we're leaving New Bern Country Club in North Carolina, all right? And we're going to go, as we jump into our time machine, we're going to go to Key West, Florida. So we're now in Key West, Florida. I was so lucky. I mean, I've been there once, but you're in Key West, Florida. I mean... how did this happen?
I had a friend who was a goldsmith, and he opened a shop down there, and he invited me to come down there, and I did, and I fell in love with, how can you not fall in love with a tropical paradise? You know, it's like Hawaii or something, except it's still... on the mainland, you know, you're not a plane flight away, you know. Key West is 160 miles from Miami out into the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Just one highway that runs along a whole chain of islands. It's closer to Cuba. It's only 90 miles to Cuba.
No way. I did not know that.
It has a very unique attitude in Key West. Key West, in history, has always been a pirate town. Originally, the lighthouse in Key West was operated somewhat erratically. They would turn the lighthouse off during stormy weather so ships would wreck on the reef. And then they...
Not funny, but funny.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the business of the town was wrecking, which is
right to bring the people in, to bring them in, right?
Yeah. You could watch a ship that was sinking and say, "Hey, we'll save your cargo for 50%." And what are they going to say? No.
Yeah.
They had to say yes.
Yeah.
And for years, this was the business. There was there's a movie. That was made about that. I forget the name of it, but there's a movie made about the shipwrecking industry in Key West. And from there, when they clamped down on that, it was the major industry for sponges, okay, sea sponges.
Okay.
And also there was a major turtle canning industry in Key West. But it soon also became a drug smuggling center. The police chief, the fire chief, and half of the fire department.
Yes.
Descended. Twice.
Right.
It's always been a very anti-establishment type of town. Back in 1982, it seceded from the United States. Because immigration authorities put a roadblock where the road hits the mainland. They put a roadblock in every car that was traveling down or coming from the Keys was stopped at it was like a border crossing.
Right. So when they went there,
it was still part of the U.S. So it's a very unique town.
Wow.
See,
you don't even know about that history. You just know Key West, water on both sides, great music, great sound, the whole thing. And, I remember they have like a pirate festival there or something. Don't they have a pirate
festival? Exactly. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a pirate festival and they have a fantasy fest.
Yeah.
No holds barred fantasy fest.
Now,
that's a whole other story.
That's like another.
But anyway, I learned more about seafood there, and that's why I fell in love with the Caribbean and fusion cuisine, which is Caribbean and Southeast Asian combination of foods there. And the seafood that's available down in Key West, I mean, it's so fantastic.
Yeah, it's got to be fresh and oh my gosh.
When the restaurants I was at there, I mean, the fish that I served at dinner was brought in on boats at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Every day.
Wow.
Now, you were working at the stall here at this location called the Blue Heaven Dinner?
Blue Heaven Restaurant.
Blue Heaven Restaurant. And you're working at the Blue Heaven Restaurant, and I heard they have freshly squeezed for their key lime pie, freshly squeezed limes, this very nice food here. Even the name is a great name. Great name for a restaurant.
Oh, it is. And that's how I started building websites. I built a website for the Blue Heaven Restaurant. And on that website, I put, the menu items. For instance, like the Caesar salad, I put a little story on the Caesar salad, saying, because most people don't realize Caesar salad was created in Tijuana, Mexico.
What?
And that was back in the 20s when people from Hollywood would go down to Tijuana. Back then, Tijuana was an expensive resort town.
Mm-hmm.
And people from Hollywood would go down there for the weekend and that. And it was one time a large party of Hollywood people was there, and a rainstorm hit, so usually they left on Sunday afternoon. They couldn't leave, so they had to stay over till the next day, and the chef had no food left. And he scrounged up some romaine, he had some eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
And came up with the Caesar salad from that.
And the rest is history. Lettuce. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's how we do invent you. I mean, I know you're an executive chef, but you know, here in Hampton Roads, I'll go in the refrigerator, put this together, put that together. You're like, oh, this tastes good. You may not cook it, you may not make that dish again, but you come up with this and this to put it together, and bam, you know.
Well, that's a lot of famous dishes were created by accident because
yeah.
the chef made a mistake or he didn't have the right ingredients and tried something new. You know, that's how dishes are created. Dishes aren't, most new dishes and famous dishes aren't created by design. Somebody doesn't sit down and say, oh, I'm going to create this new dish that's going to be great.
Welcome to Flavor Living Radio, and we hope you're enjoying the show with Chef James as he explains, it's a chef's career. The timeline, we had to take the time machine as you heard everything as we go back, and very interesting. And you know, he has on the encyclopedia, he has a section there called the food timeline. And on the food timeline, there's a song there. It came out in 1967 by Gladys Knight and the Pips, and it came out again in 1968. And we have that song here on Flavor Living, and you got to guess the name of the song and the artist. Here's that song.
I'm
I heard it through the grapevine. Woo! Oh, hey, we're back on the show here on The Flavor. And we wanted to make sure everything's going away. Listen, we're going back to part two. We're going back to part two to talk to Chef James.
Of the Culinary Encyclopedia. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are here in the present time. We kind of zapped our time machine real quickly. Got in here, hear that. We are in the present time, 2015, and we have the Culinary Encyclopedia, and oh my gosh, this is the how the idea started. You were starting on websites there in Key West. And
right, and I put stories of the dishes that were on the menu in the restaurant. The Caesar salad was one example. And, you know, gradually the stories I had about the food I was serving took up maybe 30 or 40 pages of this website, and the menu for the restaurant only took up 2 or 3 pages.
I figured, I've
had this idea of writing a food encyclopedia for years. I had been collecting these stories for years, even when I first cooked, because, you know, the history of food I found interesting. So somehow or other, I just kind of came to the decision, well, maybe I'll put this stuff on the website so I can see what it might look like, you know, all together.
Well,
So I just started my own website, and, you know, it had maybe 100 pages to begin with, and that was 1998 when I started it. I actually started my website a few months before Google was created.
No, you know, I've got to tell everybody, basically, while we're on the radio here on Flavor Living Radio, it's foodreference.com. So while we're on doing our show here, everybody kind of look at this and go, wow. Now, when I went there, I was like, ah. The first thing I clicked on was the food articles, as you said. And their range from the food history is from A to Z first, all the food articles. And you click on, when you guys go there, you click on anything from A to Z, you click on it, and it'll say, let's say I clicked on celery. You clicked on celery, it will tell you a brief article on celery, how celery was invented. They sell most of it in California and Texas, but most celery is going in California. So you collected, did you talk to reporters, or with your history and background, or you talked to many chefs about getting everything there?
I talked to a lot of chefs. I have an extensive library of probably a little more than 1,000 books that I collect. Some of them are very old books, cookbooks. Some of them old food reference books. I've got an 1886 book on the history of coffee. So, you know, there's a lot of literature out there that was, you know, very obscure, you know, written by people that were from a more scientific point of view. When I started this, there was very few popular encyclopedic information about food back then. The few that existed, for instance, the were written by the French. Okay, the Russe Gastronomique was the classic food encyclopedia, and it was written by a Frenchman about French food, and he'd casually mention American food, but look down on it. And I wanted to write a food encyclopedia about food from an American perspective.
You did. I mean, when I went to the history of peanut butter, you named everybody that was involved in it, George Washington Carver, Dr. John Kellogg from Michigan. You really covered everything on peanut from the food article. And the TV dinner, you know, Chef James, I know you put the TV dinner that was made from Swanson, but I had to ask you, when's the last time you had a TV dinner, Chef James?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I've had them in my life, but it's been, you know, probably 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, I figured. I knew that. But you really were very accurate about where the TV dinner is. And Also, I want to go to the food facts, too. You had a section there called the food facts, where...
Right.
And those foods, those different foods, you must have watched Jeopardy. You must have just called every chef in the United States and overseas for the food facts, you know.
I've been in contact, you know, with a lot of people at the various universities around this country, and food and agricultural schools, and I've got contacts, for instance, in Malaysia, in the government agricultural department, and schools in Southeast Asia and Australia, and discuss things and try. And the food facts section is actually the pages I started the website with. Food facts.
Okay.
It was, you know, short facts. When I started getting a lot of information, that's when I, you know, put it into an article, one of the longer articles.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean...
And because I like to read a lot, that's how I got the food quotes, which range from, ancient Rome and Egypt up to the current day. Just, I do a lot of reading, and anytime I see any references to food in books I'm reading...
It was there. You did not miss a beat. Now, when you go to the recipe section, now I just want to tell everybody, including myself, I learned this, there's over 10,000 recipes in this section. 10,000.
That's right.
Okay? Now, you have their appetizer recipes, sauces, cold sauces, hot and warm sauces. You have a category map from A to Z for sandwiches and cereals, and make sure you check out the pizza section. That's all I got to say. The pizza section, making your own pizza section is, wow, that's unbelievable right there.
I was born and raised in Brooklyn. You got to love pizza.
Yeah. Yes, the pizza section is unbelievable. Now, on the recipes, did you... A lot of those are yours, and a lot of those are, can you, as far as the recipe, how was that, your adventure on the recipes?
Well, a lot of the recipes are mine to start with, and then I began to have book publishing houses would send me books to review, and, as my website became popular,
mm-hmm.
and, I have probably... listed, I don't know, maybe 400 or 500 books on there, and I try and get permission from the authors, to put, 5 or 10 recipes from each book that I would review. And I have recipes from other chefs. I have celebrity recipes, because, like before you mentioned, that I must have watched Jeopardy in that. Actually, it's the opposite. I did a lot of research for quiz shows.
And that
asked me questions about things, from the Weakest Link was, it was one of them. They'd call up and say, here's a question. Is this, if we word the answer this way, is this correct?
Wow. So they would call your home there. They would call and say, hey, Chef James, like that.
Oh, yeah. and I still do that. I get quite a few TV shows, that will... just request information. Now, I don't want to go into details and say, because a lot of that, they don't want people to know.
Yeah. Like you have to keep it under wraps and keep it to yourself,
right.
Lock and key kind of, because that's like, the Weakest Link, and that's big time when people win a lot of money and stuff, So a lot of money there.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's fun, they that's what a good part of my time is spent with, not just shows like that, but even just the average readers, will ask a question in an email, and it might set me off on research that takes days in that after I answer their question, because the subject that interests me.
Wow. I mean, just the cereal recipe, I didn't know, I didn't think about it, that we can make our own cereal. You have their cereals. You have like about 20,
right.
You can make your own cereal.
Yeah. Oh, but I try and put recipes on there that most, like, big popular websites won't, because, you know, a lot of it is, you know, they'll have advertisers from the chicken industry or the beef industry or something like that, you know, so they try and stress certain types of recipes. I don't. I just put on recipes either that I like or that visitors to my website have requested.
Wow. I just 10,000 recipes are 10,000. Now, I go to the next section of the culinary encyclopedia. I go to the cooking tips. And here on the cooking tips that that Chef James has, it's from A to Z cooking tips. And I'm just going to mention the bees because, you know, my name is Brian. I have to mention the bees, okay? Bees are the cooking.
Okay.
Yeah, the bees, you have cooking tips on biscuits, black beans, black-eyed peas, BLT sandwich, bread, butter, burnt taste, buttercup squash, blueberry. I mean, he gives cooking tips on how to make, and the burnt taste, like he tells you tips on how to wreck. So tell us about the cooking tips. And then you, as far as the cooking tips, I've noticed from your experiences in cooking tips. And that
right.
must have been something else too, the cooking tips.
It is, and you know, some of the tips, you know, would come from readers also, and visitors to the website, you know, would send in tips. But you know, a lot of that is my own personal experience,
mm-hmm.
and from friends, from other chefs. You know, it's you know, sometimes there's a lot of little things that are common that you know, it's hard to fix, or it can be easy to fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good thing, one thing is, you know, when you get burnt taste in food.
Yes, yes, sir.
What can I do about that? Well, bottom line is, there's nothing you can do about it. Throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get rid of a burnt taste.
Right. That's a quick tip there, sir.
Started with
That's
the good food. Yeah. You know, unless if you make a quart of soup and you end up burning potatoes or something on the bottom, if you extended that and from a quart you made it into say 2 gallons,
mm.
you might get rid of the burnt taste. But even there, you'd still have a faint remnants of that burnt taste. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah, but you know, I bet you, in my cooking experience here. You know, if you do this ingredient or that ingredient or cook it longer or shorter, then that would stop that from happening. Isn't that true on some?
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, there's some foods that will acquire a bad taste, okay, if you cook it too long or if you don't cook it enough. Garlic is one of those. The longer you cook garlic, you have to be careful, okay? The longer you cook it,
okay,
it gets milder. If you want a good, if you like garlic, for instance, you make shrimp scampi, saute your shrimp, and when the shrimp is like 90% done, toss in minced garlic and just toss it for like maybe 30 seconds. The longer you cook garlic, the milder it tastes.
Wow. Now, is that on the cooking tips there? Is that on the cooking tips section?
Yeah, you'll find some garlic in there.
I mean, it's incredible. It's like, it's incredible. You will find it there. Incredible. Now, I went on to the who's in food, you know, and you know, Chef James, I didn't see my name up there yet as a radio food host, talk show host. I didn't see my name in it.
Well, we'll have to fix that.
Yeah.
Yes, excuse me for the food timeline history alert. We had an alert here, and we want to make sure everybody explained what's happening on the Chef James Encyclopedia, on the food encyclopedia. There's a record that's listed there. It happened in 1982, if I got it correctly. And it was a record for the 8,000-foot-long banana split. It happened in Seedling Grove, Pennsylvania, And we have a segment on that. We had an alert. I know we were going to go back to interview, but we had to play the alert from the food timeline. We'll be right back.
We are having 5,000 gallons of ice cream, I believe, 500 gallons of chocolate syrup, crushed pineapple, and strawberries, about 500 pounds of peanuts, and tin foil has to run the entire banana split, so we're talking 26,000 feet of aluminum foil as well.
That's what it will take to build the world's longest banana split, and Sealance Grove is ready.
It's going to be 26,400 feet of banana split, which means we're going to be selling 26,400 tickets. Every ticket is a foot.
Sealands Grove holds the Guinness Book of World Records honor of the world's longest banana split for the tasty treat made in April 1988. They were also the site of the first record-setting banana split in May 1982. Now they want to beat their own record and do it for a good cause.
All of the proceeds for the world's longest banana split, all the ticket sales, t-shirt sales, all the donations is going to the Muscular Dystrophy Association to benefit local children to go to the Gretna Glen camp for a week.
I saw like Julia Childs, Sarah Lee, Ray Crockford, McDonald's, and there were other chefs that I need to learn and just learn about that was in there that are phenomenal. You did some really good research on that, on the who's who's of food.
Right. Yeah, they're most of them are fairly short biographies for well-known classic chefs. And, I've started to expand that for modern chefs with longer biographies. A lot of them are chefs that I'm acquainted with, chefs that I've met and worked with.
Also there, I saw food trivia. You have food crossword puzzles, everyone. You got food trivia, crossword
right.
Puzzles, questions. And then you were talking about here, this is probably when the, as far as you're talking about the weakest link, the game shows would call you. And you probably did great questions.
Right. And the crossword puzzles, that was a chef I know in Miami. He was teaching a class to high school seniors, students that were interested in food. And he had trouble sometimes keeping their interest and keeping the classes interesting in that. And especially when it came to testing. And he asked me, if I'd ever done crossword puzzles because, it seemed that some of the students, responded better to non-traditional type testing.
Makes sense.
And so that's how I started creating the crossword puzzles was for high school culinary class.
Wow. Now, as far as I know, you said you have as far as the culinary encyclopedia. You have calls coming in now that it is invented from other colleges, universities, chefs calling in. They have to be calling you saying, "Chef, hey." I mean, but all the information's on the encyclopedia. But do you get calls coming in trying to add more information there to the encyclopedia?
To add more information or to have questions. I got one question, about why are the green peppers called mangoes in certain parts of the United States? And it's around Appalachia. They would call green peppers, they call them mangoes.
You mean like Appalachian, I don't mean to be Appalachian in North Carolina? Like Appalachian Mountain?
It ranges down from Kentucky up through southern Ohio.
Okay.
That whole area. And, that was, a lot of miners that were brought into that area for coal mining early in the 18th century. And a lot of them came from Wales. And they brought with them... originally came from India, but what these Welsh brought with them was some influence of Indian cuisine, specifically curries. And a lot of curry dishes and have mangoes in them.
Oh, wow.
And they would also pickle mangoes' skins, like, in strips, okay?
Yeah.
And what you pickled was green mangoes, okay? So they were green, and it looked like it could be a strip of green pepper. And chutney, mangoes are an ingredient in chutney, and again, you use green mangoes, so it had a green color. And they might also have green peppers in there.
Wow.
And so there was some, you know, some confusion there of what these green things were, and they began to call them mangoes. And so there's, in that whole area from southern Ohio down through Kentucky, a lot of people have parents that called green peppers mangoes.
Mangoes. There it is. Wow.
I get questions like that.
Oh, yeah.
I have a microbiologist who's, well, he's retired now, but he's a professional
yeah.
microbiologist. And he's one that his parents called him mangoes, and he got involved and wrote a whole paper on it because of my question. I said, any readers that... whose parents might have called green peppers mangoes, please write in, and I got a lot of response. So, you know, it's a two-way street. You know, I ask questions of the visitors sometimes, and they ask me questions.
Right. Well, it's a 360, so it's a win-win.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was learning about it. I didn't know, you know, because that's one of my sauces, A1 sauce. That was invented in 1820. By the chef of King of England, King George the Sixth, that A1 sauce.
Yeah, exactly. And it's some of the things that we use: A1 sauce, Worcestershire sauce.
Because we've done a great show here. Wow.
A1 Worcestershire ketchup. These common.
Yeah, and V8. Everybody look up V8 juice. You know, I wish I had a V8. Look up the juices in the V8. You know, oh, I didn't know that, you know. So, well, man.
Look up ketchup and see, you know what ketchup originated as?
Huh.
It had nothing to do with tomatoes. You know, mushroom and walnut ketchups were some of the earlier ketchups.
So, I mean, so basically...
Anything that was mashed up and had some vinegar added to it was called a chutney. You know, the lobster, walnut, mushroom, grape chutneys, anchovy chutneys. Yeah, it wasn't until fairly recently that tomato became the standard.
I'm just this is the best site in the as far as information. As cooking tips, recipes there is. I'm sorry, hands down. It's the best site out there. And we had to get Chef James on, the inventor. Now, do you have a staff that updates everything? Or is it, and I heard
I
that
do everything.
Is this yourself?
I do everything myself, from the research to maintaining the website, everything. I do it all myself.
Wow. So
that's why it takes me 12 hours a day.
It's incredible. And
I love it.
It is like the one and only, and we had to go through a time machine to understand how this invented, and we have to thank Chef James for inventing this. Wait till you go to the site and see everything there, and I just wanted to get us in the last thing. Can you give one more recipe or one more intake on sauerbraten? Can you show us how to make sauerbraten?
Sauerbraten is German pot roast, and it's basically it's marinated in beer and vinegar for 3 to 5 days. And the key taste is the gravy, which some people may find. You know, they don't really realize it. The gravy, a key ingredient in the gravy is ginger.
Okay.
Ginger is what, it's a sweet and sour meat because it's marinated in the beer and vinegar. And then the gravy has a slight sweet taste to it. Most real, authentic German cooks use ginger snaps to thicken the gravy rather than flour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ginger snap cookies, you crumble them up.
Yes, yes,
you get the flour from the cookie and the ginger flavor. So it's, you know, it's a sharp flavor. So that's a good tip for making a good sauerbraten.
Well, I was born in a German, Frankfurt, on a German-American base in Frankfurt. So that's why I had to ask.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm five, Zex Zeman, thank you, Dr. Schern. So, but you know, but I had to wanted to say about sauerbraten and this culinary encyclopedia. Thank you for being on Flavor Living Radio, Chef James.
It's been a pleasure, Brian.
And can you tell everybody again where to find the website or to find you if they have any questions to ask? Yes.
Yeah, that's Food Reference. FoodReference.com, and my phone number is also on the website and my email address. Most people keep their phone number and that secret. I don't, you know, I don't mind people calling up with questions.
Okay.
And you'll find that on the website and in the About Me and Contact section.
That's incredible. Again, it's an honor to be on our show on Flavor Living Radio, and I'm hoping the encyclopedia will grow more as years come, and it's just a lot of information there. It's great. It's just great, man. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate being on your show.
All right. Now, thanks, man. Chef James, you got to have a TV dinner, man. One more. I know you're not. You don't do that as an executive chef. But you got to try a TV dinner one time.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
Well, that was our show here on The Flavor. We hope you've enjoyed it as we go to one of the, I'm telling you, thefoodreference.com. When you go there, you'll say, we understand. We understand Flavor Living Radio. Thanks for tuning in our show. Next week, tune in next week for more. More adventures, more just history, more trends. And I hope you guys are enjoying Scarf and Carf from the UK too. So listen, eat well, drive safe, and tune in again to The Flavor.